this puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Whether you're a history lover or you love Manitoba or both or neither, it's time for Abandoned Manitoba here with Gordon Goldsborough from the Manitoba Historical Society. And if you don't like either, you will by the end of these 10 minutes, I'm sure. He joins me now. Good morning.
Good morning, Nadia.
Gordon, what was the clue from last week?
Well, I said the site we were going to visit in northern Manitoba had the acronyms RCAF and MCL in its name. And actually, that was the short version of the name. The full acronym was RCAF, MCL, SCS, BIRD.
I wonder why they let go of that. I can't think of a reason.
Well, when you have a name that long, of course, it means there must be military involvement because they love acronyms. And in this case, it stands for Royal Canadian Air Force. So it's the Air Force, Mid-Canada Line, and we'll talk about what that is shortly, Sector Control Station. So that's a long, big mouthful. We'll just call it Station Bird.
I like it. Okay, so tell us about this Station Bird.
Well, Station Bird was active during the period we call the Cold War, from the late 40s through to the 1960s, very tense political time. Of course, the Americans and the Soviet Union were threatening each other with mutual annihilation. So one of the things we need to know is if the Soviets were going to send a bomber to come and bomb us or send an intercontinental missile to come and bomb us, we needed to have some advance warning. So some of our listeners, of course, will have heard of the DEW line. The DEW, D-E-W, Distant Early Warning, was a series of posts in the very high Arctic. And the idea was that as these missiles came across the pole, they would first hear about them and then they would alert us to them. Well, of course, another component of that was that as they came further south, you needed to kind of track them. So that was where the Mid-Canada line came in, sort of midway up Canada. And there they had a series of what they called Doppler radar stations. And the concept is pretty straightforward. If anybody's ever had some dealings with the police with their speed traps, the way they work is they send out a radar signal and it bounces off of cars, it comes back, and the time that it takes to go out and come back, they can use to calculate your speed. Well, same idea. You send this Doppler radar into the sky, it bounces off of missiles, bounces off of airplanes, and you can tell not only how fast the airplane is going, but also based on where it's located, you can tell where it's headed.
Right.
So you get some advance warning before these bombs start raining down on Washington, D.C. or wherever. So that was the whole premise of it, that in the late 1950s, this Mid-Canada line was built across Canada, 8 stations altogether from Dawson Creek in British Columbia all the way over to Labrador. And it turned out there was 2 of these stations here in Manitoba. One was at Cranberry Portage on the west side of Manitoba. And then this one, the one we're talking about today, Station Bird, was on the eastern part of Manitoba on a relatively remote site just off of the Nelson River, actually only about 65 miles as the crow flies from Hudson Bay.
Do we know why there was 2 in Manitoba?
Well, they wanted to space them evenly across the country. And so just by virtue of the fact that if you look at the way Manitoba is shaped, we're quite wide at the top.
Right.
And so if you put these 8 across the country, it just turns out 2 of them happen to be in Manitoba.
So when was this Station Bird established?
It was established in December of 1956, and they started the construction then. It actually opened in May of 1957, so about 6 months to build it. A whole bunch of buildings. There were barracks for the people that lived worked at the station. There was administration. There was the technical buildings where they had all this machinery, this radar equipment. They had workshops and fuel tanks for this fueling the aircraft they had. Basically, it was like a little town there in the remote site that is very well. Even today, it's quite remote. It's forest. It's muskeg. There's really not much around there. And they had a staff. By the time it was fully operational, by mid-1957, they had a staff of 100 people. About a dozen of them apparently were military, and those were the ones that would actually use the radar equipment to monitor these incoming aircraft. But then there was a number of support staff. There was technicians to maintain the equipment. There were mechanics to keep all the equipment running. There was kitchen staff. Of course, they all had to be fed, and apparently talking to some of the fellows that worked up there, they were very well fed. There was, there were people for all of the various functions you needed to keep a town running like
that.
It was apparently all men. I'm told that there weren't any women. And they were there for periods ranging from a year to sometimes as much as 3 years. And they were there like all week. Like you couldn't go home on the weekend.
Yeah, full-time job. And where were these people coming from?
Well, all over Canada. In fact, I've even come across fellows from the UK. Some of the technologists, for example, were brought here from the UK. So they came from a wide spectrum. A lot of them were young. In fact, a lot of the guys that I've spoken with were in their 20s. So this was maybe one of their first jobs. I mean, it was a great opportunity because they made a lot of money. There was nothing really to spend it on, although I've heard tell that oftentimes in their off time, they would indulge in things like drinking and card playing. And apparently there's some card sharps that would go up there and just clean them out of their hard-earned savings.
No trips to Krabby Steve's?
No, that's a little too far away, unfortunately. But links with the outside world, despite the fact that it was a communication station, links to the outside world were pretty primitive. If they wanted to get in touch with their family, they had to write a letter, you know, on paper and mail it to their families. And so there really wasn't a lot to occupy them in the downtime. They had a gymnasium. They could play basketball and volleyball. Mm-hmm. They had a hockey rink outside. Mm-hmm. They played cards and so on. But they listened to the radio. They didn't have television then, but there was no real radio. But there was shortwave.
Okay.
And in fact, one of the guys I talked to told me that there was somebody named Moscow Molly that they would listen to.
And, who or what is Moscow?
Well,
Moscow Molly.
It was a woman who spoke impeccable English, and she was sort of a disc jockey, and she would play music, but then would also give them propaganda, you know, telling them, oh, the government's taking advantage of you. You're really not doing a good thing, you know, basically trying to demoralize them. And sometimes they would even announce, congratulations to so-and-so who just arrived at Station Bird. And they say, how in the heck did they know?
Wow.
This? So, you know, there was a lot of sort of skullduggery there too, a lot of spying and things. So it sounded like it was an interesting time. From the 1950s. But the interesting thing, especially from the perspective of our series here, is that this station was so short-lived. So let's say it opened in 1957. It closed in January of 1964, so barely 7 years after it opened. And this whole facility was just shuttered.
Do we know why?
Well, I've asked this of several people, and they said there's a couple of reasons at least. One is that the radar technology was advancing rapidly, and so the necessity of having this separate mid-Canada line wasn't quite so much as it had been when they first established it. There was improvements in the design of jet aircraft. Of course, keep in mind, this is now the early 1960s. We're now in the period we call today the space age. Mm. You know, the Soviets had orbited a satellite around the Earth in the late 1950s. 1960s, now there's more and more of these satellites. So increasingly, if you want to see a missile coming at North America, well, you don't have to have a poor guy sitting in a camp way in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
You can simply watch them from this satellite overhead. So I think it was partly a whole bunch of those things. So basically, the station became obsolete. And so literally, not more than 7 years after it was established, they closed it down. The buildings were all removed. I don't know for sure what happened to the buildings, whether they were simply demolished and then just put into a big hole, or whether they were disassembled and carted away. It might have been one or the other. I just don't know. But basically, all signs of it were removed, except for things that really weren't readily removed. So I was there a couple of weeks ago, and in fact, you could drive around on the roads that were in this old station. It's been gone for over 50 years, but the roads are still easily visible. The outlines of the buildings that we could see, for example, the three big barracks because their concrete floors were still there. The floors of the big warehouses were still there. The runway, well, they had, of course, a runway so that aircraft could come and bring supplies. The runway is still used because right next to the old site of this Air Force base is a First Nation. The Fox Lake Cree Nation is there. And so I think they still use the runway. So it's easily visible. But there's just so much that tells us that there was this post there back during the Cold War of the late 50s and early 60s.
Super fascinating. My favorite part from that whole story is Moscow Molly. I want to know where she is now. Gordon, thank you so much. What's next week's hint?
Well, next week we're going to go along the number 16 highway called the Yellowhead Route, a few miles east of Gladstone, and you'll see a cattle pasture there where there's all over the place, just littered all over. There's a whole bunch of automobile tires and tractor tires. And we're going to have a look at it and see what it used to be.
Sounds fascinating. Gordon, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Nadja.
No matter where I go, every time
time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.